Okay. Let me just look over my notes one more time. Yeah, no, that sounds good.
Okay.
For the moment, that sounds fine. Yeah, we got that. I gotta let these pages look over real quickly.
We will begin a mass invasion. We'll tell your people to surrender now and avoid war.
Don't think you get me so easily!
It is now time for us to put Earth under our rule.
It's your sacred duty to tell us the truth. Confess and take that you will give you witchcraft.
You expect me to believe that you can overrun the entire world?
We cannot be defeated. We have never been defeated. That is the message.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Sci-Fi Saturday Night.
Welcome once again to another Area 51 recording of Sci-Fi Saturday Night. One of the only podcasts left that guarantees if you listen, you'll hear stuff. Otherwise, you hear just a lot of noise, and there's way too much noise in the world these days. So we'll see how this works out. TalkCast 450 tonight. 450 times we've been doing this stuff. Kind of silly. So we've got a silly show for you tonight. It's another pandemonium pandemic show. The country is still screwed up. We're still screwed up. Life is screwed up. What can I tell you? Social distancing, clogging of the internet. We're still working on a very light staff. So tonight, once again, it's just me and Captain Cam. I've spent the day in the sweltering heat, looking from the inside of my air-conditioned cage, because I'll be damned if I'm going out. Cam, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. No AC, but, I mean, you know, sweltering is a good thing.
Well, if somebody had to swelter, I'm glad it's better you than me.
Yes. By the way, what does sweltering mean again, Dom?
It means you're sweating. It means I'm much more comfortable than you at the moment.
Okay.
So tonight we have one of those guys who I've known for years, and we meet at literally every convention I'm at, he's at. And every time we sit down, we talk, and we trade quips and we trade stories, and we're two old guys who just sit around and talk. And yet I never knew stuff about this guy. And today I decided I'm gonna do some research about a guy who once was a professional wrestler. And I didn't know that. I had no idea. He worked on Broadway, and I didn't know that. He worked on Little House on the Prairie, and I didn't know that. Holy crap. And his first formal debut as an artist was on the original 1981 film Heavy Metal. And now he's just one of my friends, Rusty Gilligan. Rusty,
welcome. How are you doing?
Sci-Fi Saturday Night. Me, I'm okay for an old man with no hair. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, and I have some hair left.
I know you do, damn it.
That's not fair. I know. Yeah, some of those things that you mentioned, yeah, that's me. But it's been a long time since I did Broadway, and long time since I did Little House, and on and on and on. I enjoy what I do now, so I guess that's something.
But, I mean, you know, it's what the hell kind of a background is that for? I've known you longer than dirt, and I never knew that about you.
I tell a lot of people this. I'm an entertainer. I started out as a child actor. I got discovered when I was in an acting class when I was a little kid, and that's how I got on Broadway, and I just went from there. When each door closed, I just found another door. I went into acting. My agent got me interested in doing art. I wound up doing art for a couple of films. I got discovered. I did some stuff for comics, which I'm and trading cards, which I'm just incredibly in love with doing. I've done acting. I've done voice work, wrestling, which I really loved until I hurt my shoulder. I don't know what else to say. Really, just I'm really just an entertainer. I just love being in front of people and making them laugh, and all the corny stuff that people dismiss, I find to be true about me. I just enjoy doing the thing, whatever it is.
The weird thing is that, I mean, if you put this list together and you said, what connects Little House on the Prairie, Policewoman, Heavy Metal, The Walking Dead, Night of the Living Dead, and Mac in Trouble, there's only one thing. And it's
the letter A. and the letter A.
And well, that's really insane when you think about, when you sit back at our age, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and you go, and you pull the Dr. Seuss routine, oh, the places we've been.
Yeah, right. Well, everybody's got a history. Mine's buried like that because, like I said, when one door closes, I was a child actor. I worked on, first I started on Broadway. I went to do television roles. I did a bunch of Saturday morning television shows. Back in the days when it was very popular to have live action, like 15 minute and half hour episodes. If you guys remember, H.R. Puff and stuff, they used to do the live action pieces.
Saturday morning TV was worth a damn. Yeah.
Right. I worked on a bunch of those. I worked on a bunch of those shows. One was called Lucan. It was about a wolf boy that grew up. It was like a Tarzan, but he was like for the wolves. I was on that show a couple of times, and then there was another one called Thunder about a girl and a horse, and I was on that show a couple of times, and then I just kept going, and, interviewing for jobs at the time was a little hard because they stopped doing regular interviews, and for a long time they would do cattle calls, they called them. So 50 kids would be like, in a line, and he'd be like, some guy that's a casting director, he'd be like, too tall, too short, teeth look funny, red hair, freckles, you go stand on the other side of the room. And then he'd be like, too fat, weird clothes, blah blah blah, you stand on the other side of the room. And then at the end of a long line, everybody would walk home dejected, and there'd be like three kids, and they'd interview just those three kids. And the acting business just became very, very hard after a while. It went back to regular interviews. And then when I became a teenager, I started getting more and more into art and less into acting. And like I said, one door closes, another one opens. And that's how basically all of it went. I went to high school. I got picked on a lot in grade school. The kids went to high school with me. I got picked on there. When I went to college, I tried boxing because it looked interesting. I had nobody with me. It was a fresh start. I got my head handed to me. And Dr. Jerry Graham, the wrestler, he was one part of the Graham brothers, who were to this day, still the most winningest tag team in wrestling. They won over 700 titles in their careers. Dr. Jerry Graham asked me, would I be interested in training? He was the uncle of superstar Billy Graham, who was the heavyweight champion in the WWF at the time. And that's where I got into wrestling. And I did that for a couple of years, hurt my shoulder, and stuck with it for a little bit longer. And then I got out and went back into doing art again. And acting jobs came up and I just kept going. You know, it's that's a funny thing about being an entertainer and doing more than one thing. You know, you just have a slate of things. You didn't do them all.
And now you sit around and you draw stuff for the most
yeah,
part.
Yeah, but I do a little bit more than that. I've been doing a lot of voice work lately. I just got done doing a voice of a character for a video game, and I did two cartoon voices just in the past week and a half, maybe.
Now, how does that work? Are they doing them live? Because travel has got to be a bitch at this point.
Yeah, I don't travel anymore. First of all, I'm not really in an epicenter. I'm not like Los Angeles, California, Atlanta. So what they do is with the internet being crazy like it is, I can just do the work from home in my studio and just email it to them. And that's pretty much what I do. They send me a script. We do a table read over Skype or Google Hangouts or whatever, or I do an audition for somebody if they're interested, you know, even over the phone. Take the script, do the work, boom, shoot it out.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's actually very cool, because when I did work for the heavy metal movie, I used to tell this in panels all the time at comic shows. There was no cell phones. There was no overnight shipping.
There was 1981, for Christ's sake. There was nothing.
There was nothing. The closest that I had was I would do some art, and it would get put on in a package. They'd actually put it on an airplane, book a seat for it, so that it could arrive a couple of hours later in Canada, which is where all my work went at the time when I worked on heavy metal. And the phone, it was like $3 for the first minute and 20 cents each additional. So I would get literally 1 and 2 minute phone calls where they'd rapid fire. I had to cassette tape every call just so that I could, you know, I couldn't even write fast enough for the notes. And the funny thing was, the first couple of drawings that I did, they rejected, and I thought I was crestfallen. I thought I was going to lose the job, but they were so nice to me and gave me chances and had me work on stuff. And after a while, it turned out to be a pretty good thing, because I did a lot of work for films. A lot of them aren't up there on IMDb, because unfortunately, only certain types of films can be up there when it first started. And then later on, they started opening it up a little bit to where if you do voice work for a video game, if you're doing a short or a fan film, a lot of that stuff that I did wasn't up there. But I worked on maybe 50 or 60 films, shorts, commercials, whatever, doing artwork and doing voice work, and it never even got up there. I probably did about 200 commercials. They don't even list one, because, you know, they don't do commercials. But whatever, you know, it's nice to have an online resume, I guess you could say.
Well, the cool thing is it that, you know, the internet has made all of our lives so much easier when it comes to stuff like that. It's when we first started out doing this stupid little show here, we worked in terrestrial radio, and we wanted to interview John Ronson. He'd written a book called The Men Who Stare at Goats, which was made into a movie with
Clooney and right. Goodman. Yeah.
And it was supposed to be fact. He claims to this day that everything he wrote in that book was true. And first of all, he's insane, but that's okay.
I don't know. As crazy as stuff has been going lately.
Yeah, I know.
I would tend to believe the goats more than I would tend to believe some politicians lately.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to argue with you there. So we got this guy lined up for an interview in Sussex, England.
Uh-huh.
That was 20 years ago.
Wow.
Do you know how much that phone call cost?
I would imagine. I would imagine.
But
Mom doesn't give you that much of an allowance anymore, huh?
Nope. Mom didn't like paying $280 that episode cost for a 22-minute interview with an insane guy.
Well, now I'm insulted. Nobody's paying a cent for me.
Exactly. And the nice thing is now, you know, I can talk to somebody in Australia one day, somebody in Cape Town the next day. And thanks to Skype and the internet, man, it's really just opened the world up for us. And it's got to have made the world easier for you, too, with, you know, doing the voiceovers.
Well, I started working with a company called Outsiders Entertainment, and one partner is here in Pennsylvania, and the other one is in the UK. So we do a lot of online meetings. As a matter of fact, I just had one with them today. And great guys, good projects coming, which is nice. I did artwork for a couple of their films, and I'm going to be doing voices for a couple of their animated features coming up. But yeah, the internet, totally worth it for me work-wise. I don't know what I would do without it.
Is there still a production of your two favorite cats in the works?
Yes, as a matter of fact, for a while it was off, because what happened was I was signed up with a company. Okay, behind the scenes, I do a lot of work with card and comic publishers. Mm-hmm. I help them do like advertising. I help them do a little bit of marketing, sometimes product design or just pitches, which is actually, you can really make a living off of that. I wind up doing it just as favors in some respects because I'm already part of the project, so it doesn't hurt me very much. But the thing with that is it was a publisher, and I won't mention their name, but they failed with the contract that I was working on. And they I don't want to say they ripped off people, but they misrepresented what they were doing to people. So the film idea that I had was basically put off. And now I'm working with this new company, and they are looking at it pretty heavy. As a matter of fact, I just spoke to one of the people who's going to be doing the animation, and we have a script lined up. I haven't got it fully done yet. You usually, depending on how you do business, you usually don't give the whole script right away. You just go for the fringes and try to go for a trailer. So I'm looking at that part of it. But when the full script is done and they start working on it, I'll be releasing bits all along.
I would love to see it. You know, I've been a big fan of your two little buddies, Mac and Trouble, for a long time.
I love those guys. I love those characters.
Mac and Trouble have been your kind of alter egos, sidekicks, for as long as I've known you, I think.
Yeah, the story basically goes, I had gotten injured when I was wrestling, and I wound up in bed for about 3 years. Doctor gave me notice to stay in bed for a while. And when, there's a long story with that I won't get into, but yeah, stay in bed for a while. So I wound up staying in bed for about 3 years. My wife brought home two kittens, and the one cat did not walk very well. That's the one that later obviously grew up to be Mac. So I took an interest in him. I love animals, and I saw that he was having a problem. his sister, which was a little gray cat, she passed away in my arms. They were both not doing very well. So I would do things like grab his back legs and force him to walk a certain way and get his muscles, get his muscles aligned so he could walk better, et cetera, et cetera. And it literally gave me the motivation to get back up again and start working. Because the funny thing was, I'd be in bed and a publisher would call and say, hey, I just put something up on Facebook. You know, your story just came out. Or someone would contact me and say, hey, I just saw the movie you did a poster for. And I'd be like, wow, I did that like 5 years ago. They just came out with it. And people never knew that I was in bed because all the work that I had done was just slowly coming out as time goes on. So I credit Mac to saving my life because I would have still been in bed. I really did not have the motivation or the drive to get up and work. It was just, you know, helping him wound up helping me. Now, I will say that the injury that I have didn't wind up getting any better. As a matter of fact, it got worse. But the thing is that I was so motivated to work that I just got up and just started working. And I haven't stopped.
Having a friend or a couple of friends like that to motivate you is always a good thing, my friend. Always a good thing.
Yes, it's true. It doesn't matter where it comes from either. It could be a song on the radio. It could be a memory. It could be having a great relative, a great wife, a great husband, whatever. It could be going to church, whatever it is, whatever your muse is, find it and let it work for you. And that's basically what happened with me. I had I have a very close family here. We have four boys and they all live at home and, we have the animals and this little kitten just basically woke me up, as funny as it sounds. So.
So let's
go. Oh, there you go. I thought I lost you for a second. It started to buzz.
No, I'm still here. Cam, you still with us?
I'm still here.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I'm not used to Skype.
Not used to Skype.
Yeah, as of late. Yes, most definitely. So I was noticing that as of late, you've now got two projects, both of them on Indiegogo, about your card projects. One is, let me just quickly check my notes here. Is your pulp trading cards, and the other is a COVID-19 trading card.
Right. Well, let me start with the COVID-19 one. That one is a card that we put together earlier this year. Took a very long time to put it together because we had to work with a charity, two artists, myself and Jay Moores. Who you guys know, very good friends with him. And we wound up doing the artwork. I did the design on the card. It went from the printer to us to being signed. And then Jay went ahead and sent it to me. And then it had to be packaged because each one is in a white sleeve with a sticker on it and on and on and on. Even though it says that the end result is $500, that's the goal amount, or even though, you know, people try to hit their goal, like they'll say, you know, I want to hit $1,000, $5,000 for the project. The end result is really that I'm just hoping that people pick up the cards. Because after this, even though it's limited to 100 cards, there's still other things you can get. But after this is over with, 100% of the proceeds goes right to the charity.
And the charity is?
No, it's nokidhungry.com. Excuse me, .org. So nokidhungry.org.
Which is a good charity.
Yes, it's fantastic. I really admire. I love doing work for animals and for children. So I say maybe about a third of what I make in the comic business. I wind up donating to animal shelters, ASPCA, different charities, buying supplies for local places. You know, it's a pet project of mine. I love animals. When this came along, I thought to myself, well, animals really aren't being terribly affected by the virus. And we did a lot of research and we came up with the fact that there's a lot of children out there who aren't eating. Schools are closed in many places that were offering lunches, and a lot of them aren't offering lunches anymore, obviously because the school is closed and there's no funding. So we decided to, you know, I don't want to say partner up, but they became the target of our donation. So that's what we're hoping to do, is get people to contribute to the project. We don't get anything out of it. We've already paid for everything to be done. Everything's bagged up. Every contributor gets an email telling them that their product is going to go out. We have all the confirmation numbers if someone asks. These are ready to go. Usually what happens when you do a campaign of any kind, crowdfunding, is people will say, well, the campaign ends September 1st, just off the top of my head. And they'll say, yeah, and we're going to ship like October 1st or November 1st. We're actually shipping live right now. So if somebody goes up and makes a contribution at, you know, 8 o'clock tonight, we're shipping tomorrow morning. We're not even waiting until the campaign is over with. These items are already packaged. They're printed, they're packaged up, and ready to go now. So we're breaking a lot of rules here to get people happy.
That's good. I mean, that's good that you've got it all set up. So people, there's, unlike some other crowdfundings, things you can get involved with, there is no risk with this one, because, you know, everything's ready to go. It's almost literally, you want it, order it, and it's yours.
Right.
Yep.
Now, how did you and Jay get together? Because, I mean, you're as different as a goldfish and a dragon.
Well, he is definitely a dragon, I'll tell you. He's an amazing artist. I love his fantasy work. I love his books. Eden Park Tales? I love his books.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Yeah, he is
killer. Absolute killer.
Yeah. The thing with Jay and I is we basically just connected because we became friends by doing shows together. A promoter named Sam Chase put on the Plattsburgh Comic Con. We've gone up there and been friends, and we've been friends with Sam did the Saratoga Comic Con, you know, both in New York. We did those shows, and we did a couple of others. I did a couple of card sets. He did sketch cards for both sets. I did the inking and the embellishing on a map that he's using for his new volume of Autumn Gray, which is his signature book. I don't know if it's a liner or if it's a variant cover, but I wound up doing that. You know, we've given each other jobs and we've gotten each other things, and we talk all the time. He's a great guy. You know, the hard part about being in this industry is it used to be, because you got to remember, I started in the 70s. So I learned from people who had done work in the 30s and 40s and 50s. It used to be a lot easier to be friends with artists. You know, hey, someone's working on a pulp. You want to join in? Oh, yeah, give me the guy's name or blah, blah, blah. I'll have something tomorrow, and on and on and on. I'll do the pencils, you do the inks, we'll get it done faster. After a while, you know, in the 80s, things started to be a little bit more selfish. And then when the 90s came along, Image Comics and the like, artists started to become, I don't want to say a little bit more greedy, but they started to become a little bit more greedy. People were looking out for themselves more than they were looking out for themselves more than they were looking out for the fans, which I really still do. and it became harder to be friends with people. It was more like, you know, you, it was more like you had a studio or a virtual studio, or you had people that you work with, and it was what was mutually beneficial. You know, whatever we do together because I'm getting a percentage, and, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours type of thing. I just always maintained good friendships. And, you know, that's the thing. With Jay, I see a lot of throwback in him that I don't see in a lot of artists these days. And I'm not bashing any of the artists I work with. I work with some really nice people. I just got done working on a trading card set that is just now being produced called Back to the Retro, which is an 80s set. And the lady that runs that set is a beautiful artist named Bianca Thompson. She's wonderful to work with. And I can tell you a whole list of artists that are great. Jay just has a really vintage quality to him as a person that makes him great to work with. So I was blessed to find somebody like that and partner up. We've actually got a couple of books and a couple of card sets in the pipeline right now. And we're thinking about doing something for a children's book series, too. So it's nice to find stuff like that.
And you've got one other thing you're working on with Jay, speaking of vintage, is it's called Sexy Scary Space Pulp Trading Cards.
Yeah.
This looks interesting. I'm going through the Indiegogo page, and you've got some really interesting and cool art here. You know, I mean, I'm loving some of the stuff you've got up here. Care to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I would love to. I have a really – I'm very fascinated by vintage stuff. Again, I started in the 70s, and I learned the business from people who, you know, worked – a lot older than I was. They would give me old comics. They'd give me tracings. At the time, we had early Xerox pages and Veloxes, paste-ups, whatever. People would give me all this stuff, and they'd be like, this is how you do a hand. This is how you do panels, setups of pages. I worked with a lot of guys at the time that were very popular. You know, I was friends with Rich Buckler, Gil Kane. I was friends a little bit with Jack Kirby. So, you know, great guys, all great guys. That's where I learned from. So when I had the opportunity, you know, to do something like this, it was based on the vintage stuff. The set that I did before this was based on The Wizard of Oz. A lot of people don't know that before – you know, the original, you know, 39 movie with Judy Garland, there was about 50 different books. There were two Broadway plays, and there were three silent films. And that's where our first trading card set, you know, of the year came from. So this one is based, Sexy Scary Space is based on the pulp magazine covers of the early 20th century. Beautiful artists like Brundage and Bergeri and a number of others, the incredible writing, people like at the time liked, you know, the sexy, it was like, you know, the quote unquote old fashioned, hey, dad has a whole stack of police gazettes in the bottom of the closet type of thing. So we decided to put together a set that commemorated that, you know, that period. Pulps pretty much gave birth to comic books. They basically introduced the two-fisted fighting hero. Costumes came out for, you know, close to the first time. And the way the stories were structured, there were even comic strips inside some of the pulps, even though they were prose books. But, you know, I wanted to put together something that commemorated that time period. It did really well. I mean, we went over 600 and something percent It was just structured. It was just structured in a way where we were giving away artwork. We were giving away cards. We were doing special stuff for holidays, like we did with the Wizard of Oz set, which went really well, too. So I was actually just talking to the printer about that today, because our printer was closed because of the virus. So the set is, I don't want to say late, but the set is going to be delayed for a short time until the printer opens back up.
The world is delayed. People are just going to have to get used to it. What can I tell you?
Yeah, well, you know how that goes.
I do know how it goes. You know, we could sit here and we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours. And I wish there was a convention coming up where you were going to be there and I was going to be there. And I hope to hell one happens soon. It's not going to be soon enough for me, but I hope it's soon. And when it is, we'll sit down, we'll share a cup of coffee, we'll trade some war stories, and
yeah, that'd be great.
We'll get to talk some more about shit nobody cares about but you and me anymore.
the hard part for me is I think that I think that I might be giving up doing shows. I've been having a lot of problems with my health, between the opportunity. As between the opportunity of going to the shows, the hotels are hard, the food on the road is hard, sitting at the table is hard. I don't get up and walk around anymore. I used to, you know, plod the whole show, take pictures with everybody. My Facebook has got a couple of thousand pictures from shows going all the way back, but the last show that I did was early this year in New Jersey. It was a one-day show. And, you know, the show was great. It's not the fault of the show. But the fans are changing. People are spending a ton of money on their costumes for cosplay, and they don't have anything left over to buy. And they go to shows, and it's all photo opportunities, and they want to play. We were at one show where all the cosplayers showed up. Nobody bought anything. They had a contest. They all took part in that. They danced around in the parking lot, danced around in the cafeteria of the building where it was. We were at a university. Show was great, but the sales were terrible. Hotel was very uncomfortable. The meals were terrible because it was just local, you know, McDonald's and things like that. And then it was a long drive home, and you're so up when you go, and you're so deflated and so defeated when you leave. And I mean, I know that this is going to sound stupid, and I admit it sounds dumb, but it's your business, right? So you go and you do these things, and people come up to me and they ask me to sign stuff. And they asked me, you know, sign this Walking Dead DVD or sign this poster or whatever. They buy a couple of books. They all want pictures, which is fine. I love fans. I love the people. I would do them for free and crawl through broken glass to do it again. But the thing is that the tastes are changing. They don't want to buy prints anymore. They could go to Walmart and buy a Spider-Man poster by a huge star for like a couple of bucks. They don't want to buy a $10 print from some artist at a show. And they're not hanging around the tables as much. They don't want a single issue of a comic. They want a trade paperback or a graphic novel, because we're now in a binge-worthy society. Netflix has a whole season of a show, and you could buy, you know, family meals at restaurants and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, go to one of like Comixology and pay 99 cents and get thousands of issues of books for free and blah, blah, blah. So they're not really, you know, the $5 they would spend at my table battles the $5 for a hot dog and a drink, or battles, you know, a couple of digital comics or maybe a used video game or an action figure. They don't go to shows for just comics anymore. It makes it hard, you know?
Or God forbid, at a bigger show, at a larger venue, that's half an hour's worth of parking.
Oh, half an hour's worth of parking. It's $50 to $60 to get in, $200 for an autograph ticket, stand online for a couple of hours, put them in a bad mood, bumping into people all over the place, $5 or $6 for a rubber chicken nugget meal. Then they get to your table.
I love these small one-day conventions.
Yes, me too. I love
small shows. It's a small con. It's inexpensive for the artist and the artisan. It's inexpensive for the person coming in. There's no cosplay convention. There's no $50 to get your picture taken with somebody with a Polaroid, puts his arm around you for 10 seconds. You know, right. That's not what a Comic-Con is supposed to be about.
Well, I
want to bring it back.
When conventions started becoming pop culture shows, it helped them. When cosplayers came out and started wearing the costumes and you could see Superman, Batman, Spider-Man in person, take a picture with them and on and on and on, it was helping. When the artists were not had their nose buried in their phone playing Candy Crush and they got up and shook hands with people and on and on and on, that was helping. Problem is that the same things that pumped up the popped tire literally were deflating because nobody patched the hole in the popped tire.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You can only blow so much air into, you know, into a tire with a hole in it until it just decides to go down again.
Until it shreds.
You know, yes. And unfortunately, I go to shows and I see people, and I'm not making fun of anybody. I'm really not. Any artist or any professional that hears this, just understand this is just a battle-weary person complaining rather than mocking or making fun of anybody. I would never do that to anybody. But I go to shows and I see a lot of artists who don't even try. They're waiting for a commission. They're looking at their phone. They're fooling around with their girlfriend, or they're doing something with an app on their phone, or they're drawing something because they brought work with them while they fill the time. And people sometimes are apprehensive of going to their tables because they see them busy.
They don't want to bother them while they're working. Yeah.
Right. And then the guy is like, well, I didn't make very much today. Well, obviously you didn't, because anybody who puts the time into work will make money. And you obviously didn't put the time into doing crap. So good for you.
You were busy doing something else rather than talking to people.
People come up to my table. I joke around with them. I give them free cards, free trading cards, because I'm still a lover of cards. It was one of my first loves. But I still give them free cards. I have coloring pages for the kids. I have a bowl of snacks on the table. I do card tricks. I tell jokes. I mess around with them. We take pictures. I'm always making, you know, some sort of a comment. I make deals with people for stuff. There might be a price tag on it, but to my wife's dismay, I never seem to hold the price that's there. You know, the thing is that you have to push yourself and you have to market yourself. What worked in the 30s and 40s and early 50s was strong personal advertising. And that died. And when it came back, people didn't know how to do it. They misused it and it died. But if you know how to do it right, your end goal is audience participation. If you could do something to affect a sale or affect an emotion. Here's a great example, because I don't want to get tongue-tied and bore everybody. Here's a great example. You have a Spider-Man collection and you say to yourself, oh, I'm missing 200. I can't find it anywhere. So you go to the Wizard show or Rhode Island show or whatever, and you go and you find it and you go, hey, on Facebook in some group, hey, I just finished off my Spider-Man collection. I was missing 200 and you took a picture. You don't remember the name of that dealer. You don't remember how much you paid. You didn't write it down. You didn't take a picture with the guy and keep it forever. You bought the book. You read it. You stuck it in your collection. Now you got all thousands of them. The one you were missing is the one you're missing. Well, when you go to a convention, people who are there, these entertainers, because that's what I call them, the artists, they're actors, they're all entertainers.
Yeah,
they should be doing something to give people more than just a sale. They should be giving them a memory. So when they go to the show and they see me, and I'm not saying that this is just me. There's a lot of others too. But when they go to the show and they see me, they see, like, I have a cosplayer dressed up as Mac, 7-foot-tall cat. So they come up and they take a picture. They'll remember, hey, that's that cat that stole Dad's hat and ran down the aisle. Hey, that's the guy that gave us the free poster with the signature. That's the guy that was pretending to bite my arm when we took a picture with him. You know, I love that joke that guy told. Hey, he gave me a free picture, or he gave my son a coloring page and told me he was going to put it online when he colored it. You know, those are the things that make shows. We're old enough to remember that we went to a couple of shows. We could pull out some great memories. Hey, that,
yes,
that
we can.
That conversation we had with that artist, or that time we helped somebody and they gave us something for free, or whatever. It's not the same anymore. And I'm not complaining, but in a way I am. It's just, it's not the same.
Well, on the one hand, it's not. On the other hand, we got to work to make it what it once was, or turn it into something we want it to be again. Between right. now and then, we have guys like you who started out working his way up the ladder, doing whatever he could do. It's been a joy talking to you. Our guest tonight has been Rusty Gilligan, professional wrestler, professional everything you could possibly think of. I don't think he ever did song and dance.
Oh, I know that. I'm surprised.
At one point, I'm pretty sure he could have.
You would be surprised. You would be surprised.
You know what? No, I wouldn't.
That Broadway play that I was in was a musical.
Oh, of course it was.
He got you there.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, man.
And I hope I didn't bore anybody. It was really nice talking to you.
Sci-Fi Saturday Night is the official podcast of Granite Con, Plastic City Comic Con, and the Upper Valley Comic Expo. We are also sponsored by Dreamforge Magazine, a superb magazine of fantasy and science fiction, and Comic Art House. Visit Comic Art House for some of the best deals on original art from dozens of your favorite artists. And if you're looking for a really great gift book for that rapidly approaching semi-annual Fairbanks Melt Day celebration, consider a look at Sci-Fi Saturday Night's first anthology, My Peculiar Family, now on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. My Peculiar Family, the audiobook, is available on Audible, because I'm not sure where else you can find it. Our intro production was provided by Rob Watts. For more of his amazing stuff, just look at RobWattsOnline.com. And don't forget to try the Watts sauce. We love it. Our outro was provided by Lawrence Made Me Cry. You can find Lawrence Made Me Cry's music on Bandcamp, and a whole lot of love to JoJo and Celine. Many thanks to the gang from his booking books. Thank you, Captain Cam. This is Dome saying, Terry and Jeannie, shared pain is lessened, shared joy increased. Thus do we all refute entropy. Better things are coming, Stacy. Stay strong, Liz. So, unless it's daytime, good night, everybody.
How you doing there, Dome? I am the terror that flaps in the night.